telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom.
What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Boy, folks, strap in. Put your pith helmets on. We have a packed show today. You're not going to want to miss any of it. We're going to start right out with two fantastic guests. One who is a regular guest and co-host, Tom Paulswitz, a man I like to call one of the most reasonable people in politics, along with Colin Seeberger of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. And then towards the end of this hour, everybody, I am going to be joined by one of my personal heroes. South Carolina Congressman Jim Clyburn is going to be joining me. What a privilege to be joined by Representative Clyburn. We're going to be talking about what the Biden-Harris administration has gotten done for Black folks in advance of a celebration of Black excellence tomorrow in the White House Rose Garden. 3 p.m., it is time to talk money on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'll be joined by CEO Bob Lord. You always want to hear that segment. 3:30, actress Kate Walsh of Grey's Anatomy fame is going to join me. 3:40, we're going to have County Executive David Crowley. I don't even know if I'm going to have time to breathe. So let's not waste any more time, folks. Colin Seeberger, welcome. You are an expert on Project 2025. Thank you for making time, sir.
Oh, it's great to be here with you, Maggie. Thanks for having me.
And Tom, great to have you here. Tom Paulswitz, if you haven't heard from him before, folks, he's a Navy veteran, a small business owner, and a two-time congressional candidate in one of the toughest districts before the maps were redrawn after the last census, covering a great big swath of Waukesha. Thanks so much, Tom, for being here to co-host with me today.
Oh, my pleasure. And what a great topic to be talking about.
Absolutely. But let's start with the news of the week, and then we're going to dig right into Project 2025. Colin, I'll start with you. What did you think about the debate?
I thought the debate was really clarifying.
Yes.
You know, Vice President Harris talked about, taking the country in a new direction, right? Talking about how we build opportunity for more people. And then you had Donald Trump, who was out there talking about the past and getting political revenge against his enemies, talking about what freedoms and rights he's been proud to strip away from Americans, right? And so I think, I think the debate was really clarifying about the two different visions. I also think that we saw one person who clearly demonstrates they have the character, the intellect, and the strength to lead this country, and one who is just completely, completely unqualified.
Yeah, pretty stark. Tom, what was, when you began watching it, Tom, I thought she was winning like right out of the box. I know people are like, oh, her first answer was a little. Nope. I thought she was winning. She laid out a couple of really key proposals to help middle class folks, including small business owner. Tom, what were your initial reactions as the debate got underway?
Well, I think my wife and I were actually watching it at a local restaurant in the beginning, and we had to keep checking ourselves to not be laughing too much out loud. But I think the key point for me was that he was so easily triggered, and his demeanor is clearly not presidential. But you had to believe that his handlers had talked to him about this, he had worked on it, but it was clearly so easy for her to be able to do it. And to me, I really thought by her doing that showed how much strength she had in situations, especially dealing with other world leaders and in crisis. That to me is what we really want in a commander in chief and a president.
Yeah, it was the split screen that went on throughout that entire debate was all you needed to watch, basically. You know, the pundits always say, if you want to know who's winning a debate, mute and just watch. And if you were just watching and there was no sound, there was one winner. Her name was Kamala Harris. He looked terrible. Yes. One of the key moments in the debate, and I think part of what Democrats have been really successful at, is really putting the yoke of Project 2025 around Donald Trump's neck. There is no daylight between the Heritage Foundation and the, by some measures, upwards of 200 former Trump administration officials that helped architect Project 2025. That is Donald Trump's detailed policy plan, period, full stop. Now, Brian, I'm going to ask you, I didn't note this in our show notes today, but I think you've got the sound from the ABC news cuts yesterday. Before the end of the segment, or before we have to say goodbye to Colin, I'd love to listen to Trump denying any knowledge of Project 2025 from the debate, because, of course, that's a lie. And we've got the sound that shows that that's a lie as well. So, folks, you're not going to want to miss that. But let's dig into Project 2025, Colin. You have been looking at this and studying it since it was published. And before the show, Colin, you and I had a interesting discussion because you wanted to point out what you see as an absolutely key distinction between previous policy documents that are wonky and detailed, which right-leaning and far-right organizations like the Conservative Heritage Foundation, the Federalist Society, etc., have come out with before, and this document. You said there's a big difference. What's the difference between this? Why is this so scary as compared to some of these other policy proposals in the past that had some of these same elements in them?
That's exactly right. And I think the key distinction that folks need to know about Project 2025 is this is really a plan to gut our system of checks and balances. We've never actually seen the most influential far-right policy group in the country come out and wholesale endorse authoritarianism.
Right.
An authoritarian playbook to basically reinvent the country and shove all these unpopular policies down our throats. But that's exactly what Project 2025 does. It does it through a few, core ways, some of which Donald Trump has been out there talking about wanting to do this week. Last weekend, he talked about throwing his political opponents in jail. Well, Project 2025 calls for eliminating the longstanding independence of key federal agencies like the Department of Justice. Project 2025 also calls for replacing 45,000 current civil servants, people like medical professionals at the FDA, climate scientists at the EPA, lawyers at the Department of Justice, right? These folks who are there to serve the public interest, calls for replacing them as political appointees is how they would be reclassified. And in so doing, they would argue strip them of their civil service job protections and allow a president to replace them with far-right MAGA loyalists. The plan also calls for empowering the FCC to strip people's licenses, right?
Broadcast licenses.
Yeah, which Donald Trump was out just yesterday complaining about ABC's moderators and saying that they should have their licenses ripped away, right? And not to mention the fact that Donald Trump and the key architect behind Project 2025, Russ Vought, who was his OMB director, have both explicitly called for bypassing Congress, ignoring laws that are passed by Congress, and illegally using impoundment powers. So you don't like Wisconsin because they vote for Kamala Harris? Well, Donald Trump thinks that he should be able to withhold funds from Wisconsin.
Right.
Right.
Congressionally appropriated funds. This one is a big deal, folks. All of it's a big deal, in my opinion, as someone who is an institutionalist,
yeah,
right, and believes in the separation of powers. Impoundment, this idea, it's a technical term, but everybody remembers from civics class, or at least should remember, that
Schoolhouse Rock, Maggie.
Yeah, that's exactly. How does a bill become a law? And that Congress, the legislature, holds the power of the purse. They are the ones that appropriate. Once a budget and appropriations are adopted, it is basically not discretionary. Now, some timing can be, but the idea that a president would punish states that he views as not sufficiently politically aligned by withholding critical federal funding is grotesque.
Yeah, it's completely un-American.
Yes.
Right? The president's job is to faithfully execute the laws that Congress passes. That's not what Donald Trump nor Russ Vought have endorsed, right? They're talking about something that is completely post-democratic, right?
Yep.
Basically modeling the behavior of authoritarians like Viktor Orban, who Donald Trump was out
there,
was out there, singing the praises of And I think it's really important for your listeners to know democracies do backslide.
Yes.
This is not hypothetical. The same playbook that I just described about gutting our system of checks and balances, we've seen play out in former democracies left and right all yes. across the globe. And what's unique is that this is happening here in America.
Right. As we speak. Tom, I wanted to ask you this. You have run in a congressional district that is by historical precedent very conservative. Has conservatism, has the GOP simply become the party of authoritarians? I mean, I'm finding it hard to identify any conservative principles left in the party of MAGA.
Yeah, I think there's a schism, though. I think there are still some, what I would call, you know, hardcore Republicans from pre-MAGA era that still believe in the rule of law and still believe that we need checks and balances within the government. They're few and far between, though. But, Colin, I do want to say this about the plan. It is a plan, and I think we've heard Trump say over and over again he has a plan, but he doesn't really have a plan. And what he said in the debate was he has concepts of a plan. So to me, though, this is this whole concept and the thing that's driving it is it's really gutting the ability of the federal government to do what it needs to do. And it comes down to two political parties, one believing that the government does not have a role in our daily lives and one that does. And to me, the difference can't be more stark, especially when it comes to civil servants. And you hit it right on the head. They want to replace thousands and thousands of civil servants with loyalists. And these are people who will do whatever the president wants them to do versus what's good for the American people.
And it's going to be the B team because no one with any integrity will work for the man anymore. It's literally the JV squad that he's rousting up for Trump 3.0. Folks, keep it locked. I'm joined this half hour plus by Colin Seeberger of the American Center for American Progress Action Fund and one of the most reasonable men in politics, Tom Paulswitz. We'll be back with more Project 2025 after these brief messages.
Keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves. She doesn't have a plan. Take a look at her plan. She doesn't have a plan.
Welcome back, everybody. Or welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn, host of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a most excellent co-host, Tom Paulswitz, Navy veteran, small business owner, former congressional candidate. He joins me every Thursday in the 2 to 3 hour to talk all things politics. Tom and I bringing onto the show this Thursday our good friend and now yours, Colin Seeberger of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Colin knows more than probably anybody does, except for those that wrote it, about Project 2025. Welcome, gentlemen. I promised our listeners that we would hear from Donald Trump in Tuesday's debate denying any knowledge of Project 2025. And then we would immediately play for you the sound that proves that he actually does very much know what Project 2025 is. So why don't we begin here? Brian, let the debate clip rip.
And she knows better than anyone. I have nothing to do with Project 2025. That's out there. I haven't read it. I don't want to read it purposely. I'm not going to read it. This was a group of people that got together. They came up with some ideas, I guess some good, some bad.
So, first of all, I would really like to return to a time in presidential politics, gentlemen, where one of the candidates doesn't say, well, I haven't read that, as like a point of pride that like my complete lack of knowledge about this topic is a good thing here, which anyways, we could spend all day on that. Disclaims any knowledge. Again, roughly by some estimates, 200 of the authors and contributors to Project 2025 worked in the Trump administration. He's taken multiple private jet rides with the guy that runs the Heritage Foundation that pulled all this together. J.D. Vance wrote the foreword to the book, whose release has now been delayed to after the election, written by the guy that runs the Heritage Foundation. These are all birds of a feather. They stick together. It's it's the same people doing the same stuff. And here is the sound. Colin, set up this clip because you know exactly what it was. Bless you. You tweeted it out as he lied his pants off at the debate on Tuesday. But this clip is where Donald Trump is basically saying to the Heritage Foundation and his leader, thank you so much for this incredible policy document and roadmap. Tell us, set it up for us, Colin.
Yeah, this is back in 2022, right, when the Heritage Foundation was really getting into the thick of crafting this thing. Donald Trump is doing an event with them, and he praises them as crafting the agenda that he and his movement are going to make happen if they get power again. It is, you know, so black and white, and yes, it really just, you know, pushes any sort of, you know, credibility, you know, is asking people to basically ignore what's happening before their own eyes. It's, yes, it's beyond incredible. So I just think that, you know, if you look at that, you look at the fact that, like, the people who wrote the chapters in this book literally were his cabinet secretaries. Yes. It's not some junior staffer.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
These are the people that you
led
chose the because they were the best minds, right, on these issues.
According to him.
So this idea that you're just going to etch a sketch, you know, yourself away from this, or, you know, try to put lipstick on a pig or something, yes, is it's
stupid.
It's beyond believable.
Let's listen to it. Here's Trump back in 2021.
I need to add to this.
Yeah.
He's the keynote speaker.
Yes.
At a Heritage Foundation dinner. That is what this is. So either he doesn't know what has happened, he doesn't remember, or he's lying.
Yeah.
And she knows better than anyone. I have nothing to do with.
Our country is going to hell. The critical job of institutions such as Heritage is to lay the groundwork, and Heritage does such an incredible job at that. This is a great group, and they're going to lay the groundwork and detail plans for exactly what our movement will do and what your movement will do when the American people give us a colossal mandate to save America. And that's coming. That's coming.
I mean, if you were in a courtroom, right, that is the smoking gun piece of evidence.
Oh, yeah,
Donald Trump should know something about being in a courtroom and being found guilty.
Yes.
There is your evidence.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
It's so, Tom, when we think about, and when I think about what is encapsulated in Project 2025 and the extreme bend on, again, gutting civil service, litmus testing based on personal loyalty, key positions in government at across every conceivable
every agency,
right? What I think of is not only is this more extreme, but this is where Republicans have frankly been moving for a long time. It's this idea of the, quote, unitary executive. So the Donald Trump trying to draw some sort of lying, false distinction between his platform and what Project 2025 endorses is belied by the decades of advocacy across the Republican Party, not just the neo-fascist Christian evangelical extreme, but across the Republican Party to pursue this unitary executive theory, which means this incredible consolidation of power, that there isn't a balance of power amongst the branches any longer, that it is really dominated by the executive branch. And the reason that conservatives and Republicans have been banging this drum and engaging in this slow march towards, and listen, a unitary executive is closer to authoritarianism than a balancing of three branches of government, of course. But the reason that they're doing this is for one simple reason, right? And it gets into their election interference, their bogus rationales, their lies about voter ID, all of this. And it's because the demography of the United States of America will render the Republican Party irrelevant if they cannot morph their policies to match what the vast majority of Americans want government to do, which is better represented by the Democratic Party. So the idea that there's some daylight between Donald Trump and his fascist version of this and the 25 plus years of the direction that the GOP has been moving in to begin with that laid the groundwork for all this just strains credulity. Am I off base here, Tom? And I ask you because you've knocked more doors of Republicans than I ever have.
Yeah, and this is, to me, this is the end result of Grover Norquist basically saying we need to shrink the size of the federal government down to the size that we can, you know, kill it off in a bathtub. And, you know, but the part that's scarier to me is it's not the gutting of the EPA. It's not the gutting of the IRS. It's not all those other things. It's the turning the military. It's turning the National Guard. It's weaponizing our justice system against perceived enemies. You know, I read today or yesterday that there are a number of attorney generals across the United States who are preparing to make sure they're being able to protect their own National Guards legally against the use by the federal government. And when you start to really think about those things, that becomes, at least to me, scary in a sense that you have someone who's willing to use the power of the presidency to go after, as he explained in Truth, that he wants to go after not only political opponents, but donors of those political opponents.
Yes. We'll talk more with Tom Paulsiewicz, one of the most reasonable men in Wisconsin politics, and Colin Seeberger of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is The Maggie Dawn Show. And you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
Now you're going to believe me or your lying eyes.
Wisconsin, welcome back, or welcome. If you're just joining us, I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show. We're talking about Project 2025 today with Colin Seeberger from the Center for American Progress Action Fund, as well as my every Thursday co-host, Tom Paulsiewicz. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being here. Before the break, Tom, both you and Colin had mentioned Trump in the last few days, as well as his surrogates, targeting not just the media, right, and specifically ABC, right? And we'll talk a little bit more about the detail there, but targeting folks who have donated to Kamala Harris's campaign, not just targeting political enemies, right? But like this, the circle seems to keep expanding, right, of those whom it is completely fine for Trump to use not just the DOJ, but the military, to your point, Tom, to target and harass. Folks, if you're listening, that is what happens in fascist regimes. The political arm takes control of the military arm. That is the coup d'etat, right? They have defections from the military. You have loyalists and then those who actually try to stay true to their oath to the people, right? Like this is how this, how these sorts of pieces of rhetoric end up breaking democracies. What scares me a lot is when we look at many of the participants in the J6 insurrection, when we talk to institutions like the Southern Poverty Law Center, what we know is that a lot of these fringe groups, frankly, recruit from the ranks of police and military. And so when I see this constantly expanding list, ever broadening, of people who it's okay for Trump to target, for his administration to target, when I think about the involvement of some former and current members of the military and police forces in some of these fringe groups, we look at what happened on J6, we put all this together like that. Are we not at a tipping point, Tom? You're a veteran. Like, what level of alarm are you at?
I'm at probably DEFCON 2.
Okay.
I would say there's still some room between, you know, the worst case scenario. You know, one of the things I go back to, though, is what happened in the previous Trump administration when the military did stand up and push back and say, this is wrong, we are not doing it. The hard part, though, is seeing what's happening, especially this slow drip as it slowly takes over the norm of what's happening. And I think Trump's a master at continuing to break norms. Mm-hmm. Where we didn't think we actually needed laws before, these norms just continue to fall over and over again. One of the things I really liked what Kamala did the other night was she shook his hand.
Yeah.
And she said, we're going to have civility. We're going to at least pretend we're going to debate fairly on this stage tonight. And you could tell that irritated him to no end because that is not what he's looking for.
And this is how to say my name.
Yeah, right.
Yes, exactly.
I'm Kamala Harris. Yeah. Right.
Just so you know. So I think what's happening, though, is, you know, in having been in the military, I truly believe there are far more people in the military who go, no, we're just not doing that. But it doesn't stop what could possibly happen.
Right.
Which is why I'm in a sense of alarm. But we're not close to where, you know, it would raise to a 5-alarm fire. But it's getting there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the hard part for people to really disseminate is someone who's broken norms over and over again starts to become the norm. I mean, you see it right now in the media. People don't really challenge Trump. You know, even getting fact checked on stage, it upset him and it upset his proxies enough to bring it up. Like he was at odds with not only debating one person, but two others instead of they were just fact checking. They were saying, no, those are complete lies.
Yeah, they immediately went and called for ABC to have its license ripped. Like if you're
revoked.
Right. Yeah. If you watch David Muir every night on ABC World News Tonight, which is the most watched news program in the nation. If Trump had it his way under Project 2025, you'd go to turn on ABC tonight and it would just be a blank space.
Yep.
I mean, that's what we're talking about, Colin, right? I mean, we're at that level. And I because we may be running out of time, I want to have plenty of time for the congressman as well. Here's what. Let's talk a little bit. I want to ask you that question. That's sort of the starkness of the threat. But I also want to ask you, what does this look like in the state of Wisconsin if Project 25, even in parts, comes to fruition in another Trump presidency?
Definitely. And to just wrap up the former conversation, I mean, Tom, the thing is this kind of politicization of the law enforcement is already happening. Look at states under MAGA control like Florida, where Governor Ron DeSantis, who opposes the state's ballot referendum to secure abortion rights in Florida, he has actually dispatched his, you know,
Goon squad,
election integrity force, right, flanked by police in Florida to go door to door with files on voters, you know, with their, you know, their personal information, right, to go around and try to inspect. Did they actually sign, paperwork in order to get that referendum on the ballot? I mean, if that is not the definition of fascism, I don't know what is.
Right.
So to pivot to Wisconsin.
Yes, please.
Yes. I mean, there are a few key goals in Project 2025, but they really all boil down to two things: pulling the rug out from under the middle class and stripping away our rights and freedoms so that way politicians, judges, corporations have more control over our lives.
Yes.
I think a few key pocketbook things that people in Wisconsin need to know. The plan basically completely overhauls the tax system and sets up a two-rate tax system at 15% and 30%. In the bottom half of income earners in the state of Wisconsin all pay at about 10 to 12% right now. They would see their taxes increase by about $3,100 a year on average because they'd be paying at that 15% tax rate. Those at the top end of the spectrum who currently pay at 37, they'd be paying at 30. So it's this continuing shift to the far right, you know, trickle down theory that, you know, you give bigger tax breaks to those at the top, that it's somehow going to create more opportunity
for everybody.
The
trickle-down lie. Our economy is a trickle-up economy where rich people make a ton of money off of our backs. And that is the $3,100 increase that Wisconsin families would see just in the Trump tax differential in income tax. You lay on the Trump tax that is a sales tax, and it goes up even more, which is the tariff plan. Sorry to interrupt.
The import tax would... people would pay about $3,900 more a year.
Yes.
My colleague crunched the numbers.
Yes.
And you know what? You don't have to. Trump likes to say that, American consumers don't pay the tariffs, right? Those are things that are paid by other countries. You know what? If that was the case, go look at Steve Rattner. Tweeted out this morning, actually, an example of when Donald Trump put tariffs in place during his first term, the cost to buy a washing machine skyrocketed, right? So we have actual examples of how this impacts people and forces them to shoulder basically a burst of inflation. But it's not just taxes. It's not just the import tax, national sales tax. You know, you look at things like Social Security, which the authors of Project 2025 have endorsed plans that would increase the full retirement age. In Wisconsin, that means that from 67 to 69, in Wisconsin, that means that 71% of people in the state would actually see their Social Security benefits cut. Yes. That's over 4 million people in Wisconsin. And what does that actually mean in terms of benefit cuts? Over the course of 10 years, depending on when you actually start claiming Social Security, you would see your benefits cut $46,000 to $100,000 over the course of a decade. That's money that you worked hard for.
You earned,
yes,
right?
It's an earned
benefit. And of course, Wisconsin's own Senator Ron Johnson wants to zero out the budget for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Folks, what he's talking about is every year you have to reappropriate for those expenditures, which would make it a budget fight. And oh, by the way, Donald Trump made it impossible for House Speaker Mike Johnson to get a continuing resolution done to fund the government yesterday. He had to pull it off the floor because there were voter suppression measures baked in. I mean, this is just, it's insanity after insanity. Colin, I'm going to give you the last words here. If there was one thing or two things about Project 2025 that you wanted voters in the state of Wisconsin to ask or research about candidates to find out where they stand on an issue, right? What do you think? Just call out the one or two most important things about Project 2025. We got folks in the Wisconsin 1st, 3rd, and 8th congressional district in toss-ups, right? Republicans and Democrats.
Yep.
I think voters should pin down those Republicans on these very ideas. What should they be asking?
I've got two. I'm sorry. I will
Please.
Do them really quick. But Project 2025 and what Kamala Harris is proposing on housing could not be a starker contrast.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris is proposing building 3 million new homes for low and middle income families. She's talking about giving people a $25,000 down payment assistance. She's talking about going after corporate landlords who are illegally price fixing. Yep.
Talked about that yesterday on the show, folks.
Jacking up rent on folks because of algorithmic pricing practices. And you compare that to Project 2025, where the plan actually calls for people who get FHA loans for their mortgages to pay higher mortgage insurance premiums if they have a mortgage that is over a 20-year term. Of course, the most popular mortgage product is a 30-year fixed mortgage, right? So this would impact tons of people. It talks about if you're in a mixed status family, making you completely ineligible for federal housing subsidies. So, that would completely take housing away from lots and lots of people.
Which is an insanity because J.D. Vance just got on some stupid talker show and was like, oh, the problem with childcare is that we don't allow for different sorts of family units. They're proposing to prevent families that are differently constituted from accessing critical FHA lending. It's sick.
Yeah, it's gross. The second thing I think is healthcare.
Yes.
You know, Trump talked about having concepts of a plan. You want to know what Donald Trump's plan is? Look at what he did in his first term.
Right.
Or look at what's in Project 2025. A lot of the same ideas. Ripping away all of the prescription drug reforms that we've seen passed over the course of the last 2 years. Banning Medicare from being able to negotiate lower drug prices. Getting rid of $35 a month insulin. getting rid of the $2,000 out-of-pocket cap on prescription drug spending for Medicare enrollees. But you also look at Medicaid. You know, in Wisconsin, 595,000 Medicaid enrollees could be at risk of losing coverage because they're too low income to be able to access another form of alternative affordable coverage through Project 2025's limits on Medicaid enrollment. Last thing I'll say is Project 2025 also calls for ending the federal guarantee that the federal government is going to be there to help states finance Medicaid by putting a fixed cap on the amount that goes to states to pay for Medicaid enrollees' health care. And, you know, you look at things like, oh, maybe a pandemic could happen.
Right.
Well, what are states going to do if there's suddenly a need for a surge in healthcare services for people who are low income? What they're going to do is kick people off of their Medicaid coverage.
Correct.
They're going to limit the number of healthcare services that Medicaid will cover. So things like that are expensive, like long-term care for seniors or people with disabilities. Yeah. They've got a bullseye on your back.
Yes, it is truly frightening. Colin Seeberger of the Center for American Progress Action Committee, thank you so, so very much. We're going to put some of the links in the show blurb today, folks, where you can find out more of Colin's great work.
Love it.
On Project 2025. Tom Paulswitz, it's always a pleasure. We don't have Representative Clyburn yet. So, Tom, I'm going to ask you to stick around with me. We'll talk a little bit more about Project 2025 until the congressman arrives. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank everybody for listening. And again, Colin, keep up the great work. We appreciate it. Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Colin and I are going to figure out a way to have maybe a little weekly discussion about the difference. There's 900 pages of things to talk about.
There's a little bit of information.
That's right. Yep, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
I have concepts of a plan. I'm not president right now.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California, well, to the New York Island.
Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Again, thanks to my last very special guest, Colin Seeberger of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. You're going to find Colin showing up somewhere in the Maggie Dawn Show weekly lineup because this stuff is just too important. 45 minutes, not nearly enough. It's 900 pages. Yikes. So there's a couple of little current news pieces I want to ask you about, Tom, as we await the arrival of the congressman. But I wanted to ask you the question, is there a particular element of Project 2025 that scares you the most? Because there's one thing in there that I was like, what in God's name is that? And it is these things that they call freedom cities. And here's the thing. Not only does Project 2025 propose them, but so does Agenda 47, which is Donald Trump's official campaign thing. So they call them freedom cities that they're going to put on federal land, and they're supposed to, quote, reopen the frontier, reignite American imagination, and give hundreds of thousands of young people and other people, all hardworking families, a new shot at home ownership, and in fact, the American dream. Which young people? Who decides? Which what? Families? What land? Who's
what frontier?
What? I mean, this is a little spooky. And when Republicans or the MAGA cult says freedom now, I want everyone in their head to translate it thusly.
Yes.
It's not freedom. It means doing away with all federal protections of civil rights and leaving it to the states to decide who to discriminate against. That's what they mean by freedom, right?
Freedom for discrimination.
Yes, freedom
really
for states
about.
To discriminate. That's exactly right. Any particular item that scares you most of all?
Well, on one hand, you know, just like we've been talking about, a lot of it is actually funny when they, because they use certain terms that at least to make me laugh, like the frontier. I mean, I can't believe that somebody would put, like, what frontier are they talking about? But the scary part to me is, and this goes back to, I've read a lot of history about Teddy Roosevelt. One of the things that he really drove was creating a protected civil service so that they were insulated from the whims of political environments and changes in political realms and everything else, so that they were able to just execute and get done what they needed to get done based on the laws that were passed. And to me, that's the scariest part of this document, is it says that forget what has been passed, forget any norms that we have in our society. Everything is open and up for grabs. When I ran, I talked a lot about we need to actually do better to protect the upper echelon of civil servants from the whims of political employees. Maggie, you worked in government. You know, near and dear to my heart, it's how do you create a culture that allows people to unlock their potential and be able to do good? Just because you're a government worker and you get paid by taxes doesn't mean it's any less of a job than if you work in the private sector, because that job needs to get done well, and it really should provide value not only to the community but to the person doing it. And this whole thing smacks, it just at face value says that none of that effort is worthwhile, and therefore we should get rid of it.
And I'll just give a personal example. Every single person on my staff, I was the chief legal officer from Milwaukee County. Every single one of those people were civil servants that had job protections. Still did the, we were still able somehow to do the work, because you do not want people that feel forced to take a certain position under the threat of being fired, because it's not what their professional integrity would lead them to conclude, right? Like, you want people to be independent and objective. And I'll be honest with you, did that sometimes lead to some pretty heated discussions with me and my staff? Sure. But that was the point. It was good. I pushed them. They pushed me. We came to a place where as an office, we could stand behind a position that we were taking. That was essential. Right. And I viewed myself as completely independent because I wasn't fireable by any of the political entities or political electeds. But that was just, that worked well. Is it difficult? Yeah. But it's supposed to be. That is what I think gets missed. It's drain the swamp. No, you're making it the swamp by making everybody a stinking loyalist. Nobody wants sycophants and yes men and women that to comprise 100% of the key leadership roles in government. You want the disagreement. That actually helps because it requires people to win arguments based on good analysis, right? Like, this is
a good
thing.
Yes. And one of the most interesting parts of all this, though, is that Donald Trump, in his core element, is incompetent. He's incompetent at being able to follow through on anything because chaos reigns in his brain. It doesn't mean it's still not dangerous, though. January 6th was dangerous, but it was led by a tremendous amount of incompetence, but it still did enough damage and caused enough harm and actually killed people. So when you think about other people maybe coming behind him who have a level of competence, that's where it gets scary. And if you put people in place who have no morals, who have no guilt or anything else, and who want to drive home what they believe is true for what they want to accomplish, that's when things get scary.
Well, and I think, you know, listen, a lot of rationalization can happen, right? People will find a way to justify their actions if they're forced to adopt a certain viewpoint, because they'll lose their job if they don't. And it is that ability, that power asymmetry, that you do not want held by one man or woman in the Oval Office. Interesting that Kamala Harris isn't asking for us to eliminate Schedule F and federal civil service. Like, why is that? Well, if it's good for Donald Trump, why would that not be good for a Democratic president? It doesn't make any sense to me. Folks, I just wanted to pass along to you all regrets from Representative Clyburn's office. The Congressional Black Caucus had to call an an important meeting. So there are a bunch of them that were doing media today. None of them were able to join us in these hours. I wish my best to the CBC and the celebration of Black excellence that's occurring tomorrow morning on the White House Rose Garden lawn. Tom, as always and ever, thanks so much for joining me, my friend. Tom will be back next Thursday in the 2 o'clock hour to talk politics with one of the most reasonable men in politics, Tom Paulsowitz. I'm Maggie Dawn. When we come back, it's the 3 o'clock hour. So we're talking money in our segment called Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Don't go anywhere, folks. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network News. Weather and sports are up next.
And he said, no way. And I said, way.
Very cosmopolitan.